Today on Seculo, Jack Smith, you're fired.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, welcome to Seculo. This is a headline that I've been waiting to read, but of course we had to wait till the election results were finalized and to see the first comments out of the special counsel. Put that in, I guess, parentheses, because there's a case pending at the 11th Circuit that we filed in that would could decide whether or not, as the district court judge did in Florida, Judge Cannon, that this special counsel being appointed outside of Congress and outside of legislative, outside of law, that was different from the independent counsel that was, again, a congressional statute, is unconstitutional, that you can't just pick someone, give them super U.S. attorney power over jurisdiction in the entire country to go after people if there's no law that allows the Department of Justice to do that, and then giving them that separate budget from outside, from inside the Department of Justice with little oversight, technically. And so you have that issue. But there is a move, and I would be fine with it, for Jack Smith. Obviously, President Trump said he'd be fired within the first 2 seconds he's in office. So instead of that, Jack Smith now will be winding down, likely, both of the cases against President Trump that he still has pending. So, of course, he's got the classified documents case out of Florida, but right now that's pending just on whether or not he can have jurisdiction. The other case, of course, involves January 6th. That's in D.C. It's not even supposed to have a hearing until March, so can't move forward with that. That is the again, that's more than just Justice Department thinking. You can't continue with the criminal prosecution of a sitting president of the United States. So Jack Smith knew the election outcome would have huge impacts on his ability to move forward, but let's remember why it took them so long. The Supreme Court said what they were trying to file was unconstitutional initially out of those January 6th cases, that basically the president and this idea of when is the president not the president while they're in office, and what's presidential acts and what aren't presidential acts, were, you know, those are questions that were going to have to be decided, that now it doesn't appear we will, and it probably doesn't have to be in the future either. If we can get rid of lawfare, we're going to have Tulsi Gabbard on later in the broadcast. I want to talk just about that. So it looks like, again, so out of Florida, either Jack Smith will withdraw and his team, and then the Department of Justice would, again, withdraw the charges from the case. And that could happen in both. I would think that what is, you know, pending quickly, obviously, is what's happening at the 11th Circuit. Now, if you're talking about the state cases, it's a little bit different, and we're going to get into those in the next segment of the broadcast. Those are pending out of New York. One with, you know, you've got the Attorney General, Letitia James, making comments like she will be the savior, you know, of democracy and continue to go against Trump. Can she really do that? We will discuss it right when we get back from this first break. You know, this is a short part of the show. I do want to thank so many of you who got involved in our election integrity, the support for that work. We are still, just so you know, we're in contact with the right folks on the congressional races that are outstanding, because there's still many House races outstanding. Now, there is a path for Republicans to get to the majority with, I think there's about 11 of those that would get like to the bare majority that you need to get to, 218, 219, somewhere in there. But we'll talk about that as well. What's important today is that we're also launching our 2024 Faith and Freedom Drive. You know that we have seen a massive attack on faith and freedom, and this drive's crucial now more than ever, including in these next 74 days of the Biden White House. As he made clear this morning, you know, he is in charge. He is president of the United States and still commander in chief. So we're going to see these attacks against Trump. I think federal is very possible, especially with Congress and freedom. So we're already ramping up our legal teams to fight back. We filed a brief to have Jack Smith, as we said, we filed in that to have him removed from his unconstitutional prosecution against Trump. Now he's backing down, folks. That's a huge win for the country and against lawfare. So I thank you for standing us with there. But New York Attorney General Letitia James, she just threatened that, quote, we're prepared to fight back, and the state courts are different. We're going to discuss it, but we need your support. Your donations will be doubled for the whole Faith and Freedom Drive. Donate today, ACLJ.org. Welcome back to Seculo. If you got questions about this, 1-800-684-3110. And of course, about the future as well. We'll be talking to Tulsi Gabbard about that, a part of our ACLJ Seculo team. She'll be joining us to talk about those priorities that the team's already working on. You know, transition teams are already in place. I think something that President Trump has talked about a lot, which is important, is to get the right people in quickly. You remember how, even going back, how Jim Comey tried to utilize the fact that the American people wanted to elect an outsider from politics so that in those first couple days in the White House, they were not all folks who were, again, and even appointments then, that were used to being in that position. The FBI agents just walked right in and, you know, were talking to people. And that is something that should not have been allowed. And that's something, again, that won't happen again. So I think it's going to be with the cabinet process, you're going to see, again, a much deeper look into people that, one, they share the actual vision of President Trump. They don't just want the position, trust that they'll carry out the policy dictates of the president as well. So we can talk about that with Tulsi Gabbard when she is on. I'd like to hear from you on that, too, at 1-800-684-3110. Now, what's important, too, is the legal issues. And a lot of people have been asking, you know, what happens to all these legal issues? Remember, the big part of the campaign was he's a convicted felon, you know, and what's interesting is let's go right to that case. So we talked a little about the federal cases. We'll do that again in a minute, but the state cases. So let's go to Harry Hutchinson. Harry, let's start with a case that's got trial dates on the calendar very soon. And that is the case out of New York involving that one involves whether or not, again, you've got did President Trump basically, I think the next one in New York, is that the Mershon case, right?
It's the Mershon. So this is where he was convicted of the felony counts, where the
kind of felony counts,
exactly,
right? The business dealing. So you remember saying you were inflating the numbers and the numbers to get the loans, and somehow that is criminal. What do we think is going to happen in that case? Because there's an upcoming hearing in that.
I think there's a hearing either this week or next week. And as I recall, Judge Marchand has set a sentencing date toward the end of November. My own intuition says those cases will arguably be paused, if not dismissed, in part because Donald Trump is now the president-elect. And if he were sentenced to some form of prison, he probably would be entitled to an immediate appeal, or at least he would post bond pending appeal. So I'm not convinced that that particular case is going anywhere. There is also a case involving 34 counts brought by the Manhattan District Attorney, alleging essentially that Donald Trump violated New York law. How? Because he engaged in illegal federal campaign violations. And I'm not necessarily sure of the status of that particular case. But the two quintessential cases that are before us today involve Jack Smith, who basically has sought to bring a charge, number one, claiming that Donald Trump has violated the federal laws governing the handling of documents. That's in Florida. And then has engaged in election interference in violation of the law. And he's brought that particular case in Washington, D.C., before Judge Chutkan. Now, it's important to keep in mind that the Justice Department policy prevents the Justice Department from essentially attempting to imprison or bring charges against a sitting U.S. president. Neither case that is pending, in other words, the two cases brought by Jack Smith, are likely to be ready for trial before sometime next year at the earliest. So more likely than not, those two cases will be wound down. So if you look at this, we basically have had a kaleidoscope of cases brought against Trump, and they were all designed to do what? To prevent him from running from office. Meanwhile, bringing all of these legal cases has backfired. It has made Donald Trump stronger, and hence he won an overwhelming victory a few days ago.
Yeah, so, Will, on Tuesday, Judge Bershon has set a date. Really, this is for him to decide whether or not the conviction should be tossed at this point.
Right.
And there's a lot of discussion that he may dismiss the felony counts. So that whole idea that, you know, he's a convicted felon of 34 counts, that goes out the window. Those were controversial to begin with because of the issues we just talked about with Harry. And again, I don't think we have to get bogged down in this if this moves the way it is looking like it will move, that maybe he tries to keep the misdemeanors. Of course, you can appeal those, and President Trump's team can appeal those, but that doesn't really put any kind of delay or harm on the president from being able to move forward with the transition and his administration. It also would, all of these moves really pull a plug, Harry, on the kind of any attempts by congressional Democrats to say, well, he's a convicted felon, and thus, you know, under some 14th Amendment issue, because we're not even going to get to those cases. So on insurrection, all that, he was, first of all, Jack Smith really didn't bring those charges technically. But second, the idea that there's even felony counts out, that may be done as well, which should make the transition for President Trump a little bit easier when they are certifying the election on Capitol Hill.
Your analysis is precisely correct. And keep in mind that Jeremy Raskin, a representative from Maryland who has threatened to bring charges within the meaning of the 14th Amendment, thus disqualifying President Trump from taking office, he may be bereft of any power to do so. Number one, because more likely than not, the Republicans will retain control of the House of Representatives. But number two, there will be no basis within the meaning of the 14th Amendment to deprive President Trump of the opportunity to take office either. So I think at the end of the day, the 14th Amendment disqualification claims should likely disappear, but we should never underestimate the willingness of Democrats to try to stretch the law, to try to stretch the Constitution, to go after President Donald Trump.
Yeah. I mean, so you've got, again, I think you're going to see action, obviously, on the federal side. What's interesting, too, Will, is that you've got, of course, Tuesday, we filed in cases at the 11th Circuit, the one to question whether or not the special counsel should even be constitutional. I don't think we're going to get a final decision on that now, but we filed, and we would be ready to fight that battle in the future if that is tried to be utilized and weaponized again against President Trump, who ultimately has the authority to fire those special counsels, and said, you know what, to Jack Smith, and made it clear he's going to be fired one way or another. Those cases are not going to be moving forward, and I think Jack Smith hopefully will do the right thing, not even put the new president into that position, and knows that under the policies you gotta withdraw. And then out of New York, I mean, Letitia James is talking tough, but those are civil cases. I mean, so
right.
Yes, it's a big bond that President Trump had to put up, but ultimately, again, they really have little impact on running the country or this whole idea that he's a felon. That I think those are going to get tossed aside hopefully next week. And the other charges there on the misdemeanor counts probably can be appealed because those are very weak. And then you look at the felony counts. I think Letitia James could say whatever she wants about being tough on Donald Trump, and they're going to still be this somehow basically keep suing him in state court for civil issues, I guess, that, again, as we've seen from President Trump, he's somebody that's not going to be distracted by that.
And people also shouldn't forget the RICO case in Georgia, where Fannie Willis was not taken off of it. But there will be, there was oral argument in the appeals court in Georgia whether or not to keep her on, and we should expect a ruling by them sometime early next year. I have a feeling, especially with the political temperature, that they will dismiss her from the case, which that case will go away as well. But one more thing about Jack Smith before we move on in the next segment is that case down in Florida, the one that we just filed in, Right. That's one I think the Department of Justice doesn't have to get out of to some degree, but really wants to, because it's already been tossed, the case against Trump. Right. What they're appealing is whether or not that Jack Smith, a special counsel, could stay on. Since it's only a lower court ruling in one district in the United States, I think the DOJ, for policy purposes, would rather get out of that as soon as possible so that they don't have a, now an appeals court ruling potentially saying that special counsels are unconstitutional. I think that they want to try to preserve that power, and they're in kind of a tricky spot right now.
Yep. All right, folks. We will continue to update you. As I just said, we have launched today. It's our 2024 Faith and Freedom Drive. This is what prepares the ACLJ, not just these next couple of months, but also to start the year, that we have the resources ready to go to make sure we get the right people confirmed, the right cabinet confirmed, those battles, anything that comes up in these House races that is remaining. We're ready to go there. We need your support. You're able to double the impact of your donation so we get this right this time, right from the start, and they can get a running start in Washington, D.C. Support us. Donate today, ACLJ.org. All right, welcome back to Seculo. I want to take your calls, and then we're going to give you an update on where we are with the House of Representatives. Remember, second half hour, Tulsi Gabbard is going to be joining us as well to kind of talk about the getting to, you know, obviously the victory on Tuesday, and then looking forward as well to legislative priorities, priorities for the Trump administration, and for those individuals who came on and joined that team and were very clear with the priorities they had and the reasons why they decided to make the bold steps of whether it was RFK on endorsing President Trump and campaigning with President Trump, or even doing the events just with him and Tulsi together to bring in new people to the party. And I think that's why that definitely added to these numbers that we're seeing in the popular vote. I mean, the fact that Will, before we take to the first caller, that it looks like, I mean, again, all the votes have to be counted, and there's still a lot of votes left out there that will affect the popular vote, obviously. But it looks like right now that we will win the popular vote.
That's right. I mean, as
when I say we, that the Republican presidential candidate, Donald Trump, wins that popular vote, which also puts, we said that, you know, the one move that they wanted to do on, you know, maybe trying to say that he's under the 14th Amendment somehow, he's a felon and not qualified, that's not going to work. It doesn't look like, because of the court cases, even out of New York. And then when you look at the situation, of course, on these other issues like the popular vote and should we not have an electoral college, well, what was shown by going to California, by going to New Mexico, by doing a little extra campaigning at the end in states that were not as close, but were again, they were populations and demographic groups you wanted to speak to directly to the entire country. That's, again, it's how you can kind of get over the edge. And it shows you that if Republicans, if you just do a little of that, of course, that's not how you have to win the election. You don't have to get to the popular vote, but it shows if you want to, Will, that we can actually win the popular vote, which I think would scare most Democrats away from trying to take the Electoral College away and thus the power of smaller states in the country.
That's right. And when you look at where the popular vote tally is right now, President Trump leads by about 4.7 million votes. Now, California has only reported about 60% of their votes. They're kind of slow out there at turning in their returns, but you can expect that maybe she'll net a million or two more from the outstanding races because they are coming from more liberal parts of the country. It'll be closer, but it's a pretty tough hill to climb for her to make up 4.7 million votes in these last days. And as we're waiting for everything to be certified from some of these states. So I don't think that she'll eclipse it. That's a big win for the Constitution, because all of this chatter about the popular vote being the way we need to go, right, which will disenfranchise.
You're not legitimate exactly. President if you don't win it. Well, I mean, what are they going to say now? Because like Will said, if you come in with a 2 million like margin, even if she gets up some on that, I mean, that's not even close. So what are you going to say, that he's not legitimate because, one, the charges against him are being dropped federally. Two, even the state charges, it looks like, are going nowhere. And we'll know about that very soon on all of that. So that all would be done before he's even taking the oath of office, so that he wouldn't even have to fire Jack Smith himself. That they're self-firing right now, which is great. They don't want to have to go through the Trump. Should we play it for everybody? We can play it for everybody. I guess Jack Smith doesn't want to have one of the moments from TV. Let's play it.
You're fired. Get out of here.
Right? Which he said he would do in the first 2 seconds he was in office. And I think anybody coming to office would. We get to calls. I think what's important here, though, is that a couple major attempts at restructuring our entire country and election system in a way that's worked, in a way that does work, and we saw it in this election. And if you look at 2020 as just kind of this bizarre COVID election in our history, and it's 4 years that, Lord, a lot of people would like to forget politically, with the Biden administration and kind of a president asleep at the wheel and the withdrawal from Afghanistan. You could go through the horrors, but let's look towards the positives in the future now that we can fix it. And that's what the job is of this new majority coming to Washington, which is going to likely be a Republican majority in the House. Slim, but a majority, which the Democrats thought that would be their holdout. We know there's going to be a Republican majority in the Senate, Will. The question is right now, we're at 52. It looks like we're going to get to 53 in Pennsylvania. And there's a couple other races that it's possible that we could add one more. But 53 is still in a great place to be when you're talking about getting your nominees through to the people that you really want to serve in your cabinet and the people that have to go through the confirmation process, judicial nominees as well. And then, of course, legislation. I mean, they'll look at, again, will there be more Democrats that are willing to cross the aisle on some of these pieces of legislation, knowing that if not, I mean, they've got nowhere to go in the House, nowhere to go in the Senate, nowhere to go in the executive branch. So I think it's just a critical time. We take the call. Let's go to Todd out of Georgia on line three, because I do think answering these legal questions is going to be important over the next couple weeks. And we're not just going to do this today, but obviously when the moves start happening, we will update you on this broadcast throughout with all these different cases, whether it's Georgia, Florida, D.C., and New York. We will update you. But Todd, you're calling in from Georgia and you're on the air.
Yes, my question is there an update in the hush money case?
So that is the case involving Alvin Bragg and the business dealings. So they brought that in as the reason why there was some kind of campaign finance violation, and thus the New York district attorney, a district attorney in New York, could start enforcing federal election law to make a misdemeanor, which is the falsification of business documents in that case, the 34 felonies. That's what they said would brought it to a felony. And we expect that Judge Mershon, who already has it scheduled for next Tuesday, whether what he's going to do with these charges. I mean, that's what the hearing is on. And most people expect, Will, again, that these are going to be tossed some way, one way or the other.
And Judge Mershon has an easy out here. Because remember, there was a critical error, and some people called it mission creep, by Alvin Bragg's office when they brought this case. This was campaign finance related while he was running. But at trial, they introduced testimony from individuals that worked in the Oval Office. And so what the and related to things that were going on with the president's work as president of the United States. So the critical error by Alvin Bragg is that he may have introduced testimony which would be covered by the immunity agreement, which wouldn't typically apply to in this scenario. But because of the way the prosecutor brought it forward, that may be the key reason that Judge Mershon on Tuesday says, you know what? The evidence before the jury was tainted because you introduced things that the Supreme Court has now said you cannot.
Right.
Therefore, I'm dismissing everything. Get it out of the court. No appeals process. And then they can just go back to the shadows of their work as judges.
You know, and I think, again, in D.C. with Judge Shutkin, I mean, that was not supposed to be against until March. That is involving, of course, the federal. So that will get done with Jack Smith. And that was the other one involving. I bring that one up again because that was the one that they were going to try and tie to some reason not to potentially some move not to seat him. Now, if Republicans stay on track and get to that 219, and hopefully the number's bigger, and they've got the Senate, and of course the White House, none of those moves would likely go anywhere. And what is going to be important for these first 2 years is we get to that 219, the left, which I think is going to be on fire under President Trump, we'll see, but I think they will, is not going to be able to bring a bunch of bogus impeachment trials to waste everyone's time, including the president's, while he's got these 4 years to do the work that the American people overwhelmingly voted for him to be in charge of, whether you look at the Electoral College or the popular vote. Support the work of the ACLJ. We're now launching our Faith and Freedom Drive. That means, you know, again, it's connecting to these House seats that are remaining, if any work needs to be done there. Of course, these remaining cases involving Jack Smith, we filed in there, and that looks like it's going to be a big win. But with Letitia James, we're prepared to fight back too, if necessary. We need your support. It's our biggest and most important 2 months of the year.
keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Fire! Get out of here!
You, that would be Jack Smith. Just to update people, if you're just joining us on the air, Jack Smith, the special counsel, whose special counsel status, by the way, we also filed in the case that's pending at the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, has been revoked by the district court in this case out of Florida, the case involving the classified documents. And they will have to decide again, do they even want those cases to move forward, about whether or not the special counsel is even constitutional. I don't think they will. And I think that what we're hearing from all reports is that Jack Smith is going to be, in some sense, either withdrawing his team, and then the Department of Justice would withdraw the charges, and that would involve Washington, D.C., and the charges from that pending, you know, coming out January 6th, but also the classified documents case, and it would put an end to the case over whether or not his position was constitutional or not, which means the next time around a special counsel gets appointed, they could probably still do their work. They'd be in the one jurisdiction may have an issue, so but it wouldn't be final that that's unconstitutional, even though we do believe it is when you look at the situation that there's no law. There's no money behind it. I mean, the list goes on and on. Now, to update you too, in New York, Judge Mershon, that's the one where they could use the 34. He's, you know, convicted of 34 felonies. Well, Tuesday, he's got a hearing to decide what to do. As Will explained, there's evidential problems there because he brought in people that now would have been covered likely by the presidential immunity case out of the Supreme Court. And so it gives him an easy way to say, you know what, this whole thing is tainted. And we're throwing at least these felony counts out, probably the whole case with the misdemeanors too. But if those are moved down to the misdemeanors, that becomes, again, a question of money, and that will be appealed by President Trump's attorneys. Same thing goes, again, with Letitia James in those cases that are the civil cases involving, again, the buildings. Remember, she won the seizure, and President Trump put forward the bond. I think that there's going to be, again, serious issues there, but that is not those are not criminal matters. And then, of course, you know, you look at Georgia, and there's hearings coming up there about whether or not that Letitia James should be able to remain in any way as a DA in that case with all the problems. So they weren't even close. They were like, those were starts and stops, and a lot of this was self-created, and that's what should happen when you're engaging in political lawfare, which I hope we've lived through as a country once and for all and don't see again, and that we're able to get into Washington, D.C. And this is what is going to be so important with the work of the ACLJ, is to get into Washington, D.C. and assist in making sure the bad actors in these agencies aren't making decisions that can continue eroding the system of justice we have, our legal system, and eroding the confidence we have in our government. And you remember, you know, sometimes you say, oh, well, since President Trump, maybe ACLJ won't be as busy. We are busier. There were probably more lawsuits filed by the ACLJ against the federal government while President Trump was in office than maybe even the Biden administration over these 4 years. And we'll have to look because, again, the Biden administration, there still might be more lawsuits. They still got 74 days left, so we might not be done with filing lawsuits there. So understand, when you talk about, you know, coming in, fixing things, getting rid of the bad actors, making it easier to remove these bureaucrats who have who are not following their instructions and are actively, whether it's leaking information or actively trying to thwart the instructions and the policies of the President of the United States and who they designate to be in the cabinet. Now, this is going to be important, too. There will be battles. I mean, yes, there are 52, it looks like, Republican senators, hopefully 53. That should make it a little easier, because even if you lose a couple of the very moderate Republican senators, you've still got 51, right? So, but we know that even if the numbers are there, they will go after these people and try to ruin them and their reputations before they ever get to the job. So part of our work will be is, with those, if good nominations are made, to get behind in their support. It's why we have the ACLJ. It's why we have ACLJ Action all ready to go on Capitol Hill. But we need your support. And in these 2 months, we put together really our budget for the beginning of the year. So we know exactly what we've got to spend and are ready to go. You double your impact your donation. So if you donate $25, that's like $50. Right now at our Faith and Freedom Drive, donate today, aclj.org. We need that support to be ready. to Seculo. We are joined by Tulsi Gabbard, who's part of our Seculo team here on the broadcast. And Tulsi, first, give everybody a sense. I know they've been looking forward to hearing from you of what it was like, one, to join that team and those last couple months running up to Election Day. And then, of course, seeing the results of all of that nonstop work that you've been engaged in, sometimes on your own on the campaign trail on behalf of the campaign, sometimes with RFK Jr., in bringing in, I think, a whole new group of voters, Tulsi, that may not have even considered voting on Election Day or were looking for how this administration coming in will be different. And now that we know people like you and RFK Jr. will be around. But what was it like just to get our team who's been, you know, getting to know you over the process you've been on air with us leading up to and then on Election Day?
Yeah, it's been quite incredible, especially on election night, as we all were watching those results roll in, really to see how the American people's voices were heard. What I saw and felt was just so hope inspiring, because when you look at what happened throughout this campaign, really, frankly, what happened since 2016, everything that the power elite and the Democrat elite, the national security state, the military industrial complex, everything that they threw at President Trump, everything the propaganda media threw at them, everything with big tech trying to manipulate what information we're allowed to see, the American people saw through it. And they voted for a president who has clearly shown through his record and through his message to the American people in this campaign that he stands for free speech, that he is eager to bring prosperity back to America again and make life easier and better for the American people. And as he has said over and over, that he is the president who wants to end wars, not start them. It was hope-inspiring to see that in this Democratic Republic, when we use our voices and when we see beyond Democrat versus Republican, but look for a leader who's going to put the American people first, it works. And so now the real challenge lies ahead of just helping, as I'm here in Palm Beach now, to try to help President Trump with great options and a good team of people to help support him in carrying out this work once he takes office.
Yeah, I mean, that's the next question, Tulsi, which is, we know, of course, that looks like we're going to have we've got a Republican Senate, might be with 53, possibly with 54, but 53 looks more likely right now, as votes are still being counted, which is crazy. We can talk about that on the side on a whole other show. But as that's moving forward, it does, again, I think, give you even broader options to choose in a cabinet and not just cabinet, but your advisors as well. Anybody who's got to go through that confirmation process that we know now with majorities in the Senate can't be totally stalled out by Senate Democrats who just, you know, are trying to usually ruin some. They try to pick and choose a few that they try to, you know, ruin their lives, even if they are going to get ultimately confirmed. But we know that's a key, as you said, to getting, you know, as president, you've got to put those people in place, because of all the things we're talking about are big issues that takes more than one person, takes more than just the president, but a team willing to implement it and pushing back against a bureaucracy which has not been friendly, and it's probably not going to be friendly at the beginning. But what do you see from you too? I mean, because I think it's unique because you joined that team. That what do you see as like top priorities? I mean, obviously we know free speech and the ideas of protecting the First Amendment, but the actual what legislative things we can get done in policy wise when it comes to you know, this kind of messy situation we're in the world with Russia and Ukraine, the Middle East as well.
Yeah, well, the first thing, as you said, with the people that President Trump chooses to be a part of his team, in my view, they're going to have to be ready to really fight. And it's not just that we got to be clear-eyed about what the challenges are going to be. You know, there are some Republicans who are serving in Congress who are pretty entrenched in that establishment, people who President Trump has had to take on before. And in these battles that ultimately he has won, and not just electorally, but with policy. So really, this is going to require having a strong team of people who are not thinking about what their next job is going to be or, you know, the big book deal they plan to have at the end of it, but people who are really willing to go to fight and battle on behalf of the American people. to be able to get President Trump's agenda enacted. It's not, you know, you were talking a little bit about the confirmation process. Obviously, that's where it starts. And I think that's where I just would encourage your listeners and viewers to keep an eye out for how the big special interests, big pharma, the military-industrial complex, and others are going to, in the national security state, they're going to try to undermine President's agenda. We got to remember that these are people who do not respect our democracy. They don't respect the voices of the American people. So even though our voices were heard in this election, it's not the end of the fight. They're going to do everything they can to try to neuter Trump. And this is in Congress in some places. But as you mentioned, it's also in the administrative state and the bureaucratic state who want to try to wait him out or slow roll him or block him for the next 4 years so that he's not able to deliver for the American people. This is how dangerous a mindset it exists in the entrenched Washington establishment.
The one thing I think is interesting, because, again, he's someone who has served as president and went through those 4 years, 4 years out of office, and now we'll have 4 years back in office, is that we all remember the issues that were, a lot of them, kind of, I wouldn't say self-induced, because this was someone coming totally outside of the process, but by some of the advisors and people who just weren't thinking as much about, oh, this person's resume looks great, so let's put them in this position. And then ultimately thought, well, because he's an outsider, he's going to let me basically make all the decisions I want. And so I'm going to run this department this way. And we saw that conflict. And I think we saw Jim Comey even take advantage of that by walking FBI agents in and not going through the normal process of going to the White House counsel to schedule interviews or even allow those interviews to take place. So I don't think that, again, we have to be in that position again. And I think that's the goal, is that you can hit the ground, right, Tulsi? I mean, you want to be able to hit the ground running the moment that you've taken that oath, putting forward that team and getting not just the top names in place, but their people in place as well, so that from day one and on, you can start putting forward those policies you've been campaigning on into action, especially while you've got what should be a much as friendly of a Congress as you can ask for as a president. I mean, you don't usually always get, you know, the House and the Senate. You might only have it for a couple years. You don't want to play out longer than that. And so there's a lot to do. But like you said, those interest groups, right, like they didn't lose on election night. They may have lost some of their influence from people that are that were in Washington, D.C. on the right and the left, but they still have the money and the resources to fight back, like you said. And so we are going to be fighting some big outside influences as well.
That's right. And I think that's, if there's any message that I hope your listeners and viewers take away, is this: we won, we the people won on election night, but we got to stick together and stand strong for the battles that are ahead, so that we can remind every single elected official in Washington, D.C. that we the people have the power. And so if they start to bend to the interests of these major corruptive and corrosive entities and organizations, and they make decisions that are not in support of the mandate that President Trump has brought forward, we have to hold people to account in every way possible. I really am hopeful that in this administration, we're going to see far more transparency than we've ever had before from any federal government, that we're going to see, you know, with the help of the Elon Musks and, you know, others who are obviously Bobby Kennedy and people who are going to tell the American people every single day, here's what's going on, here's where the problems are, here's who the problems are, and here's what we got to do to overcome this. Here's where we need to make cuts. Here's where we may need to invest a little bit more. I think with that transparency and including the American people in this work, this is very much aligned with what President Trump has always done. I could see him, and I'm not speaking for him, but I would not be surprised if he continues to make time to go out and have these big rallies to tell the American people what's going on, where the problems are, and what we got to do to fix them and to solve them. So the work really is just beginning now that this election is over. And as you said, it is critical, and President Trump is focused on making sure that he can hit the ground running with the A team by his side, ready to get to work.
We've only got about a minute, Tulsi, but I did want to say too, I think, you know, there were some new issues too that expanded, and I think we don't have to even really dive deep into the numbers to know about, when we look at the numbers, when we look at the popular vote, issues like health, issues like the, like you've talked about, this military-industrial complex that were kind of new for Republicans to really start thinking about this election cycle and voters in general, people who may not have voted. And we grew the tent. I mean, and it's a big thanks to you for stepping out, taking the heat that you take for doing that, because it's clear with those amount of votes, Tulsi, that with 30 seconds left, that we brought a lot of new people on board to this team, whether it doesn't have to be a party, but about the issues that are important.
President Trump talked about it over and over. He said this is a movement of love, and it is. And that's how all of these people came together, out of love of country and love for each other and the knowledge that we got to fight for our freedom and our future.
Tulsi, thank you for taking that time. Get a little rest, but we need you to keep working. We will be right back on Seculo. Back to Seculo. You know, as we begin these next 70-odd days before the inauguration, obviously, as you just heard from Tulsi Gabbard, you heard from our team, and you know this, that you have to be clear-eyed and ready for the fight that you go through until you're even to Inauguration Day. Now, I think we did a good job, and all of you did a great job by getting out the vote. And we said if we swamp the vote, there's not going to be election issues that are widespread. The issues that were happening on Election Day were taken care of. The issues that we had to deal with the ACLJ, we were able to deal with quickly and assist those who needed help. It was a kind of a different feel. And even the criticisms that came in remember some of these states that said this is like Jim Crow voting in Georgia? It'll be like that this election cycle. And there was all that, you know, focus on the new Georgia election laws were going to disenfranchise people, and then less people would be able to vote because it would make it tougher. Hey, Will, just tell everybody, how many more people voted in Georgia this presidential election?
That's right. With about 4.8 million voting in 2020 in the presidential election, Georgia has had about 5.2 million voting this election. So they added about 300,000 to 400,000 votes under the voter protection law measures that were passed by Governor Kemp in the wake of 2020 election, that Democrats went on a firestorm saying that this is disenfranchising voters. The president himself said, Joe Biden said, this is Jim Crow 2.0. He even said this is like Jim Eagle. He was trying to make a clever pun about the voting law. But instead, what you see is when you put voter protections in place, more voters were able to turn out there.
And I think that's what you saw. We told you folks, we said, in many states, there have been good updates to the laws. And, you know, we're not going to be dealing with just flying around. Everybody's getting paid ballots mailed to them. And did some of those situations occur? Of course. But most of those were not widespread. And so what we had to handle was not mass confusion. It was issues here and issues there. And that's, again, a machine doesn't break, or if they need to recount the votes because it wasn't put away properly. You know, that poll watcher saw it, and Maricopa County put the votes back through. So no question. You didn't have to, like, go to three levels of court to get that done. So the transparency then equaled more people voting. And I think, again, it took the Democrats off guard, because when you look at we played it before from CNN, we're not going to play it again, but there was not a single county in the country where, and this is just strange based off demographics too, just people moving. So some places, you know, just bigger populations of maybe liberal voters, things like that. But still, with all of that and all the transition that was made in during the COVID years, there was not a single county in the country that Kamala Harris was able to outperform Joe Biden, even by like 20 votes, not one. So when you look at that, Will, it is not as surprising that Democrats going into the election night thought, even if they lost the White House and the Senate, which they had almost basically admitted to because of the races that were out were going to be up in this cycle, that they thought that they were going to flip the House. I mean, they were fairly confident there. And now it looks like that is not going to happen. It's not 100% certain yet. But right now, if you look, the House Republicans are on path to the similar kind of majority, 218, 219.
Right.
But it's a majority, and that gives President Trump a majority in the House and the Senate to work with. And you know what that does prevent, likely? ridiculous impeachment hearings, trials in the Senate that slow things down. It prevents that for at least a couple of years till you get to those next midterms. And I think it can also speed up the time to get good people in those positions so that you can implement the policies that you promised you would to the American people. You got to have cabinet secretaries. You got to have advisors. Those that need to get confirmed, you got to get your people out all around the world. And that will be done. And I think that people are going to be really excited about who's named. So there won't be some of those issues that we dealt with, you know, directly as attorneys this time around. And that's great that I think that there is something that President Trump will take away for that first 4 years. And that was what he said was the number one issue that he feels like he made errors because of just being new to politics was some of the appointments he made and the time it took to get those folks out. And if you don't have that issue, which there's no reason you should this time, that is going to be a lot smoother than to get your policies put in place. And then you go to the legislative issues as well, and you fight those battles.
That's right. And so in the House of Representatives right now, about 400 races have been called. So there are 35 outstanding races that have not been called yet. Republicans have 209 seats, and Democrats have 191. Now, you look at that and you're like, there's a good advantage. A lot of the races that haven't been called that are pretty secure Democrat seats in California, they haven't tallied all their ballots there yet. They can't be like Florida and do it, you know, within an hour. But there are some signs that the Republicans do have the momentum to at least, it looks like, get to that 218. It will be close. There's a race in Washington State that's guaranteed to be a Republican because they do a jungle primary system where the top two vote getters go on to the general election. Both of those are Republicans. So no matter what, it's a Republican versus a Republican in the general election. No matter what, that seat's going red. Alaska,
210.
Alaska hasn't been called yet. Pretty safe to say that it's going to be the Republican seat, 211.
And then
you look at, there are some where there is a good margin for Republicans. Then there's races like this. This one is Iowa 1st District. The Republican leads there by about 800 votes, but they are done counting the ballots. There's going to be a recount there most likely, but it's only a 400,000 vote total cast in this race, making up 800 votes in a election like that. It looks good for Republicans. There's about 11 or 12 that Republicans are leading as of right now. If they were to take even just a handful of those, it gets them pretty close to that 218.
Yeah, and then you get to the 218, you try to start building on that. And obviously, you're able to focus your resources now on those places that are down to an 800 votes. And if they go to a recount, that you've got the right monitors in, and if necessary, legal steps. And that is, you know, we have made it loud and clear to the people that we need to, that if any additional assistance is needed legally, we're ready to go. We've done those cases before a number of times in many cycles, as you know. And so we will see. I mean, some of that work will take some time to shake out. It's again, because they do move quickly, but they'll look at, it's the time now. And then of course, between the beginning of the new Congress and of course the swearing in of the president. So that is a critical time. I did, and I do think this, the radical left is kind of, you know, they're figuring out what are they going to do next right now. Okay. It doesn't like they're going to have the House. They don't have the Senate. They're not going to have the White House. And the man they called Hitler just won the White House with the popular vote. And amongst Jewish voters, for instance, I mean, margins that we've never seen before, closer to 40 and 50% of the Jewish vote in key battleground states had gone Republican, where in the past it was like 10 to 20%. So, I mean, doubling or even tripling turnout there. Hispanic vote, the black vote, Latino vote, women. People just saw through all of the words and attacks and said, listen, I know what I'm living through right now. I know what it costs to have to go to the grocery store. I know what it costs to fill up my car. I don't want to keep hearing about the fact that, you know, somehow none of us are going to be using gasoline, or so why are we not using the oil that we have in the United States? But also, those same people say, you know, why is the food we have all these chemicals in it? You know, you can be on both sides, you know, the same sides on those issues. And I think that's why we have this great coalition. Support our work. Double the impact of your donation. Donate today, ACLJ.org. We need...